and welcome. You're watching The Buck Stops Here, and I'm Barkha Dutt. The big story tonight, India has summoned Pakistan's envoy to India, Abdul Basit. The Foreign Secretary, Mr. Jaishankar, presented Abdul Basit with clear and concrete evidence of Pakistan's role in the recent terror attacks in Uri. In fact, going so far as to say that India was willing to place before Pakistan DNA samples and fingerprints of the terrorists that had been killed in Uri, and making the larger point of how Pakistan's infrastructure continued to support terrorism, talking of 17 such attempts to push in infiltrating terrorists this year alone, a year in which 31 terrorists have been killed. So as India summoned the Pak envoy and said, here's the proof, India simultaneously demanded what it called an exact response. On the program tonight, as India confronts Pakistan's envoy, just a couple of hours ahead of Pakistan's Nawaz Sharif scheduled to speak at the United Nations General Assembly, well, one Sharif is dialing the other Sharif. Just before he is about to address the United Nations General Assembly, a speech that India will be listening to and measuring word for word, Nawaz Sharif spoke with Pakistan's army chief amid the widely held belief that it is Pakistan's military that is wielding all the power and virtually directing Nawaz Sharif, including the content of what Pakistan's prime minister might say later today at the United Nations General Assembly. Now, all of this comes as the defense minister Manohar Parrikar has conceded that there were gaps in our own security grid at Uri. Speaking at a public event, Manohar Parrikar said, something must have gone wrong and I will definitely find out what that was. He went on to say, I believe in zero error and 100% perfection, admitting thereby that that was clearly what did not happen at Uri. The nation must ensure that what happened at Uri is never repeated. Also significantly, Manohar Parrikar was reinforcing what the finance minister said earlier today. Remember, the prime minister has chaired two high-level meetings to define India's response to Uri, the cabinet committee on security, and later meeting a select group of ministers at his residence, and the defense minister making it clear that Pakistan's threats, in particular nuclear threats, need not be taken seriously. In fact, he referred to them as empty vessels that make a lot of noise. While saying that he was against knee-jerk reactions, he also said importantly, if required, I can have a knee-jerk reaction. Went on to say, I will not sleep while terrorists are being pushed across the border. And very importantly said, the Prime Minister's statements will be implemented. Remember, Prime Minister Modi had said that the attackers of Uri will not go unpunished. Now, what exactly is India contemplating? Nobody knows and nobody should know. Let's say that. What a state does in response to a terror attack cannot be deconstructed and defined on prime time or in newspapers or on websites. But the government is taking into account the high level of public anger. Before I go across to my colleague Sudhir Ranjan Sen, who's in Srinagar, and we can bring him up, I want to give a sense of what we've actually culled together from our sources. What we're hearing again and again from leaders in government, from people in military, from people in intelligence that we've been talking to is the following. Diplomatic measures may not be enough this time around. So yes, the routine options are available to recall an envoy from Islamabad, to ask Pakistan's envoy to leave. But what we're hearing from the sources we're talking to is that this time the level of public anger is such that visible justice and visible action, this is what the government believes is needed. These sources are also saying to us that therefore routine diplomatic measures may prove to be insufficient this time. Of course, for obvious reasons, they will not define what the non-diplomatic options may be, but they have indicated that the forces and the military have been given a free hand to make that determination for themselves. And that could cover an entire range of options from covert to overt, but nobody will or should spell them out. They are, however, underlining that the military has a free hand to determine its own response. The government will not be intervening in what those responses might be. Now, importantly, there are things happening across the border which give you a sense of how India's mood is being gauged across the border. Pakistan has restricted its airspace. PIA flights have been halted to POK as well as to the northern areas, and the leaves of Pakistani rangers who are serving along the border on the other side and along the line of control have been cancelled. This on a day that the Prime Minister, as we said, has chaired two high-level meetings, the outcome of which is that routine diplomatic measures may not be enough and that the military will be given a free hand. All of this as the defense minister admits that there were certain lapses in Uri that can never be repeated again. Sudhir Ranjan Sen has more on that. Sudhir, among the things that you have been reporting on is that the terrorists were able to get inside 150 meters of the army compound without being challenged.
Well, yes, I mean, that's what the initial probe is revealing, that not only did they get through the counter-infiltration grid, which is a multi-layer grid, but they cut through the fence, and in two places the fence is cut, and they walked unchallenged for about 150 meters before, you know, making or coming in contact with the soldiers. Soldiers at that point of time, early in the morning, mostly unarmed, and some of them, or rather many of them, cornered as they were going into the washroom. That is when the first massacre happened. Then we are told that the soldiers break up into three groups. One moved towards the officers' quarters of the mess, the other towards the mechanical transport section, by which time most of the massacre or most of the killing out here has happened. Of course, we must say the military, the army responded very, very quickly, and the entire encounter was over in 20 minutes. But that said, what has come out is the fact that the soldiers had kept their weapons inside a tent in a makeshift armory, which is why they could not reach to their weapons. Also, next to where they were housed is the kitchen, which had kerosene or K-oil, and that went up, causing a lot of injuries. Barkha.
And Sudhi, very quickly, there are also two ongoing encounters in the Kashmir Valley. They've been on for the last 24 hours. The Foreign Secretary making a mention of this, in fact, when Abdul Basit was summoned, the Pakistan envoy. But the army being extremely tight-lipped about these two encounters, waiting for an actual body count before they are declared closed. One soldier, of course, martyred in one of these encounters.
Well, yes. I mean, roughly about half an hour ago, I did speak to very senior officials here in Srinagar. And what I was told is that one of the encounters in the Nogam encounters drawing to a close, more or less, while the Uri encounter, because a number of infiltrators, you know, being assessed to be between 12 and 15, still continues. And what we are being told is that it will take some more time before the army calls it off. That is because they want to ensure that whoever they have engaged is either being killed or has run away, and there are no remaining or straggling elements that could still try to get back. Barkha.
All right, Sudhir Ranjan Sen, thanks very much. All of this ahead of Nawaz Sharif scheduled to speak at the United Nations General Assembly, and on a day when two U.S. lawmakers have actually moved to declare Pakistan to be a terror state, something that a member of Parliament, Rajiv Chandrasekhar, is also wanting the Prime Minister to, in fact, do now. Let's introduce our panel as we hear increasingly from sources in government who won't and shouldn't, for obvious reasons, reveal much. The diplomatic measures may not be enough. What is the array of options realistically before India? On the program tonight, we are joined by Chandan Mitra of the BJP, Rajiv Chandrasekhar, Member of Parliament, who writes to the Prime Minister today to say he'll be moving a private member's bill to also ask for Parliament, India's Parliament, to declare Pakistan a terror state, like those two US lawmakers moving that bill. We're also joined by Randeep Surjewala, senior leader of the Congress. General VP Malik, former Chief of Army Staff, is with us on the program. With me in the studio is Dhruv Jayashankar from the Brookings India Institute. Let me start with you, Chandan. There is a sense that how the government responded after Pathankot was very different from how the government is responding now. After Pathankot, we even offered contentiously the opportunity for Pakistani investigators, including the ISI, to visit our airbase. What has happened this time that has crossed the threshold of tolerance? Because we have seen terror attacks, we've seen Gurdaspur, we've seen Pathankot, now we're seeing Uri. Are we seeing Prime Minister Modi finally making a tectonic shift in his Pakistan policy and giving up on any chances of peace with his neighbour, very different from his unannounced December visit on Nawaz Sharif's birthday, for instance?
Well, I think nobody will disagree that Prime Minister Narendra Modi has tried hard, very hard, to normalize things with Pakistan, given them opportunity after opportunity, tried to persuade them, tried to hold back many hawks within the Indian establishment to say that, no, let's give them one more chance, let's hope now after this they will start behaving. But this time, the Pakistanis have crossed all limits of tolerance by going into an army camp, even if there were lapses on our part. That doesn't matter. But this pre-planned attack on an army camp and the brutal massacre of 18 Jawans who were unarmed at that point of time, I think the nation is not going to take it anymore. And because the nation's mood is not to take it anymore, I think this is being reflected in the government's statements and the kind of options that are being weighed. And I have no doubt that very soon some action beyond the routine diplomatic steps will be taken.
That is important. So you are reinforcing, in a sense, the story we just broke here, that there is a sense in the political establishment, and we can bring those graphics up again, there is a sense in the political establishment, Chandan, this time, that diplomatic measures are insufficient this time around.
Yes, I think everybody is quite fed up, because in the past, we have been advised caution by other countries, by organizations within our own country, that look, war is not an option. Since war is not an option, we must exhaust all diplomatic measures, and only then can we explore other possibilities.
Yes.
In my opinion, war is not an option even today. But at the same time, we cannot just keep lying down and taking Pakistan's offensives without response. So options short of full-fledged war, but something that is going to hurt Pakistan economically and militarily, I think need to be considered. I'm sure they are being considered at the highest level.
Well, in fact, the Prime Minister has just concluded his second meeting of the day, chairing two high-level meetings in a day, Chandan, and leaving the military to make its own determination. But what you say is very significant. Something more than the usual diplomatic response, something short of war. That is where India is exploring its options today. Randeep Surjewala, why is this the moment for the Congress to say that our soldiers are being used as cannon fodder? Why is this not a moment for the Congress to stand shoulder to shoulder with the BJP? I really do not see this as a BJP versus Congress debate.
Oh, absolutely it is not. And we said that on day one, and I reiterate here, that anything that government does in the interest of national security and take decisive and calibrated steps that are required to be taken as the country requires, Congress will support them wholeheartedly. Congress, if I may remind you, when Kargil happened, Srimati Sonia Gandhi was the first one to walk up and say there is unequivocal support to Vajpayee's government for any action in order to ensure that that the enemy is repulsed. Having said that, there are two facets that clearly arrive. One, why did Uri happen, which your channel showed and which the defense minister has spoken about? There has been a failure of command and control structure. There has been an operational and intelligence failure on part of our establishment and the defense ministry. Somebody needs to be held accountable. Otherwise, why only Gurdaspur and Pathankot? Let me also remind you, twice terrorist attacks have happened in Pampore and once in Udhampur. They will continue to happen. Defense minister will continue to say, oh, nobody will come in without my permission, like he said that. He said that last time also. Second thing is Modi government captive of its own platitudes and rhetoric? After all, the same Prime Minister spoke about not writing love letters to Pakistan, 56 inches chest and other stuff. But what is the calibrated, decisive approach that leadership needs to take is what the country is waiting for.
Okay.
But it's a failure of political leadership,
sarcasm,
and that is writ large.
This sarcasm is totally uncalled for. From the heart, from their minds, the Congress wants this government to fail. The Congress would be quite happy if Pakistan scores more points in its ongoing war with India. I mean, listen to this language. There is no unequivocal support.
I take very strong offense to that.
It's shameful.
It's the kind of language that Mr. Amit Shah used in Bihar, saying that there will be crackers burst in Pakistan. I think you need to be far more mature. We will stand with the nation and with this government on all issues of national security.
Let me come in here.
We will not deter in our duty from pointing out about failure of political leadership
what
and
you,
failure
when,
of command
when you
and
say
control
Randeep,
structure
Randeep,
of the government.
Randeep, when you say that for that failure of command and control, as you describe it, somebody should be held accountable. Who do you mean? Do you mean the defense minister, or do you mean a particular brigade commander? But I would still say, can these questions not wait for later? We are actually in a very, very volatile, fragile, tenuous set of circumstances where the country is still determining its response to Pakistan. Can these questions not wait for their place and time? Very quickly, Randeep, then I want to move on.
Barkha, I completely agree. But the fact remains that merely because these questions, and it's not me alone pointing it out, it's not Congress, it is the defense minister also conceding. Prime minister has to also fix accountability to ensure that these acts which have got repeated over and over again of terrorism from across the border and then blaming Indian establishment do not happen. Defense minister has to be held accountable.
Okay.
Defense ministry has to be held accountable. While a decisive and mature response needs to be taken to deal with Pakistan in a firm manner.
Okay, I need to move on now. So let me bring in General VP Malik, then Rajiv, and then Dhruv. General Malik, there are people in the army also who have expressed disquiet that these terrorists were able to, you know, make the breach that they did despite intelligence inputs that did suggest that there could be a spectacular terror attack ahead of Nawaz Sharif's arrival in New York. There are those who've even linked this as a retaliation by Pakistan for the Prime Minister raising center staging Balochistan. There is also Pakistan's insidious agenda that has long existed to want to internationalize Kashmir. And to that extent, any kind of escalation may in fact suit this insidious agenda. Where do you see wisdom in the set of options available to India at this moment, sir?
Look, I think firstly we have to take note that today we are dealing with a cumulative impact of terrorism on our country. It's not just the Uri attack, but I think we have to take into account what has happened even before Kargil war and in any case post-Kargil war. And if I notice today, the nation's patience has really run out. And today it's not just, we have to take into account how the progress has been blocked by the other, and particularly the nation's morale is getting affected. So I feel that taking no action or taking a weak action, I think for the government today is no option. The government has to take some action, and I would request both my colleagues from the Congress and the BJP, please don't get involved in tutu meme or political debate. Let me assure them that
people who have been weak
or who have, there have been lapses, the lapses in the army which has taken place, and I am accepting that, they will be taken to task. But having said that, it doesn't mean that we don't deal with the major issue that is being confronted with us today. Because even if we take strong defensive measures, the offensive side from the other side is not going to stop. So we have to think on those lines. Now, as I said, today not taking any action is no option. Taking a weak action is also no option as far as the government is concerned. My suggestion would be, firstly, do not take a knee-jerk reaction. Consider it in more detail, and please consider it as a multidisciplinary response that we need to give. Not a single service. Leaving the army to do what it should do is not good enough. That's not the way to go about it. We have to have a multi-institutional response, which is to be controlled and monitored by the CCS, as it happened during the Kargil war. And that's the only way you can succeed. But leaving it to Home Ministry or Ministry of Defense or Ministry of External Affairs, and you know they're doing their bit of work, is not going to work. It's not going to have any impact whatsoever. So our response should be multi-institutional, multidisciplinary, and it should be very well coordinated by the CCS. CCS is meant for that.
Yes.
CCS is meant for holding such meetings every day, and during Kargil war we had 2 meetings or 3 meetings in a day. So as far as the options are concerned, yes, there are options available. Military heavy options are available, diplomatic heavy options are available, but we have to also include the political side, the intelligence side, covert, overt, as well as what we can do socially or what we can do economically. And military, of course, must be kept in the loop. And whether it is military heavy or not, it doesn't matter. Military must be kept on the loop because it can suddenly be asked to go and do something which it has not been doing earlier.
Yes, that is a very important point.
I'm not going into detailed options, but there are options available. There are a very large number of options available, from minor actions across the line of control, whether you do the fire assaults or whether you send some commandos or whether you carry out some helicopter raids, etc., etc. I will not go into details, but all those options are available, and I am very confident myself that if those things are properly coordinated, properly monitored, we can succeed.
General Malik, let me come in.
We need not be worried about it.
Let me come in on this.
We can succeed.
And I do understand that, you know, television and journalists can't determine what those options should be. But equally, we do have a very significant statement coming from BJP leader Ram Madhav today, who said that India will not surrender to nuclear blackmail. Now, there has been this talk of nuclear deterrence, how a conventional response is no longer possible, that you can only have conflict below the nuclear threshold, that it is no longer possible to contain conflicts to limited and isolated pockets, and I do want to discuss that at an analytical level, not that we are sitting here telling the government what to do. But Rajiv Chandrasekhar, you write to the Prime Minister today and you say it is time for India's parliament to designate Pakistan a terror state. For India to do that, we have to get past the kind of blow hot, blow cold, carrot and stick approach that all governments in India have had vis-a-vis Pakistan. Every prime minister comes in with the hope and the dream that she or he will be that person who will achieve defining peace with Pakistan. So you can't have that pipe dream on the one hand and have India's parliament wanting to declare Pakistan a terror state on the other.
No, absolutely. And I echo what General Malik is saying. I think this is not the right time for people in the Congress to be nitpicking about who was responsible or not responsible for Uri. This is a time for determination and national resolve building. And that is why I believe starting point of that is for the parliament to say that Pakistan is a terror state. We've got to stop doing this good cop, bad cop thing that Pakistan has played us for so many years and decades. There is only one Pakistan, and that is that Pakistan that, you know, launches terror attacks on India, and that's what we should focus on. And we have a series of tools available to us. We have economic, we have diplomatic, and we have military. And we must use all of those options, not in any half measure, in completely full measure.
But Rajiv, push that point further, because your letter to the Prime Minister also says start with withdrawing MFN status. You actually want to place a bill in December in the winter session saying Parliament come together to designate Pakistan a terror state. Randeep, if that bill were to come, would the Congress support it?
Oh, absolutely.
The Congress would agree to be part of a resolution calling Pakistan a terrorist state.
That's good.
That Pakistan is a state that follows terrorism as state policy,
that
and there
is
no distinction between state and non-state actors is
writ large. That is a different nomenclature. That Pakistan uses terrorist state policy is different from India's parliament, like the US lawmakers today who want to designate it a terror state. These are two different nomenclatures.
Why should Pakistan, I ask myself, why should Pakistan not be designated so? Why should Pakistan continue to have a most favored nation status under the current circumstances in face of such grave provocations and successive export of terror from Pakistan's soil? So I am sure that Parliament in its wisdom will have no difference of opinion on issues of this nature and is capable enough of speaking in one voice.
Okay, I want to bring in Dhruv.
Issue, if I may.
Yeah, okay, complete your point, Randeep.
If I may just add one line, the important issue is not only economic sanctions, as General VP Malik said, the country today is restless. I'm not saying listen only to the families of the 18 martyrs or those who have become spectres about no action being taken. The truth is a decisive, mature action, strategic, diplomatic and economic on part of government is required. Rhetoric and platitudes will not do. I think time has come for decisive action.
Now, I want to pick up on this notion of rhetoric. politics does guide the decisions of all governments everywhere in the world. So you can't divorce politics from it. But how much is the BJP vulnerable to being a victim of its own rhetoric from the past, to having promised a stronger response in the aftermath of terror attacks than, let's say, the Manmohan Singh government did? That's one. And the other part is, we do have operations from the past that have gone wrong or not yielded results. So think of Operation Parakram. Right? You have this massive troop build-up. You actually have more than 1,800 soldiers die in the demining process that takes place, just withdrawing them from the border. So that's actually so much more than those who died in Kargil. So where do you see these options, as Chandan defines them, which are more than the routine diplomatic offensive but short of war?
So on the first question, I think you can actually turn it around on its head. The BJP in many ways has much more political capital on questions of national security. Prime Minister Modi in particular does. So I'm not sure it's fair to
necessarily... Isn't there more pressure on him because of his stated positions from the past?
Take the example of 2008, when Manmohan Singh was Prime Minister. You had a Congress party that was at that time beleaguered for many reasons. You'd had a spate of terrorist attacks leading up to the Mumbai attacks. And elections were around the corner. You had a government that was accused of being weak on national security. And yet you saw the Prime Minister and his government take a position in the aftermath of those terrorist attacks that he got a lot of criticism of and yet it did not lead to a negative outcome for the Congress in the 2009 election.
Yes.
So I think if you were to look at the historical example, I think the current government is able to, in some ways, relatively more immune to public pressure on this issue. That doesn't mean, of course, that
they can ignore it, yes.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean also... this government has showed, at least diplomatically, that it's willing to think outside the box. And there's no question, there's no reason to think right now that it's not willing to look
at... But when you hear members of the government say diplomatic measures will no longer suffice, and you heard Chandan actually echo that on record,
yes,
that you can't do the usual, summon the envoy,
sure,
ask the envoy to go, get your own envoy back, though all of those may be things you go through before you consider other options.
Yes.
There is the nuclear question that hangs over us, which is why Ram Madhav's statement, "We will not surrender to nuclear blackmail," becomes really important.
So I would disagree a little bit with Chandan Mitra on the one issue of when the turning point was for this government. It wasn't now. It was actually a few months ago. And it was when Pakistan decided to try to take advantage of the agitations
unrest,
in Kashmir.
Yes.
And you saw, for example, after the Quetta bombing, for the first time, this Prime Minister did not send his condolences or tweet his condolences to the people of Pakistan and the government of Pakistan. You saw a hardening of the position.
And the Baluchistan factor also comes in after that.
The reference of Baluchistan, the Independence Day speech. So you've seen a series of events, this government hardening its position and deciding that enough is enough. It's had 2 years of attempting and going well out of its way to try to engage with Pakistan. Sometimes, despite Nawaz Sharif's best efforts, it doesn't seem like Pakistan is reciprocating.
So I do want to discuss with the panel tonight, what then can India do, and where will world leaders weigh in on that? Because that's really important. You know, there is the China factor to talk about, even as India perhaps invests a lot of its capital in Washington. Ambassador Hussein Haqqani is in Washington. He has been Pakistan's envoy to the United States of America, since then been a trenchant critic of the policies followed by his state. Hussein, you have been quite acerbic, even on social media, saying that for those in Pakistan who believe that Pakistan has succeeded in internationalizing Kashmir with all these tensions, world opinion has shifted. What do you expect Prime Minister Sharif to say before the UNGA today? Can this situation between India and Pakistan still be brought back from the brink, or is it far too late?
First of all, I don't think we are on the brink yet. This is like a bad movie that plays in our homes almost every few months now. And we have to see the same film, shouting a little bit on the Indian side, shouting on the Pakistani side. Now, look, I am fully sympathetic to the position that they have to be payback for attacks like Uri. And so, and then Pakistan has to shut down terrorism, and it has to do it for its own sake. Masood Azhar celebrating the Uri attacks in Balpur is not acceptable. That said, we also know that calibrated steps are always better, and I think diplomatic and economic coercion of Pakistan will take some time. I'm not saying that should happen right away, and I'm not saying that is something Pakistan would want. Mr. Nawaz Sharif will only be talking to the Pakistani public. And basically what we really need to do, you and I together, is to tell the Pakistani people what dangerous position their government and their intelligence service keeps putting them in every few months. That said, I don't think that this is a street fight in which the small guy has slapped the big guy, so therefore the big guy should immediately punch him in the face. I think Indians also should think about everything. I agree with General V.P. Malik that whatever options are considered should be calibrated, well thought out. And I think Pakistan, very frankly right now, is far more vulnerable to international isolation than it was at any other time in its history. Very few countries in the world. Look, Kuwait no longer gives Pakistanis visas. It's a Muslim country. The UAE and Saudi Arabia have mentioned the Uri attack while talking about the Kashmir situation. If Pakistan wanted to internationalize Kashmir, it has internationalized it in a bad way. Instead of talking about the Kashmiri people, the whole world is now talking about Pakistani-backed terrorism, and that's not good for Pakistan.
You wanted to come in there, Dhruv, and then I want to go to General Malik. Yeah.
I would completely agree with Hussein Akhari there. I mean, if you see the international response after the 2001 parliament attack, compare it to the response in 2008, compare it to the response today, and you see now more and more countries are actually assuming that it is Pakistan-based militants that were responsible for this. There's no question, there was a question after 2008.
But there is China correct. That continues to block every move that India makes, even against the Jaish-e Mohammed at the United Nations General Assembly. So let's not forget China.
I would actually, and that's one area I would disagree with Ambassador Haqqani, is that Pakistan in some ways is less isolated, and that's because it's getting an unprecedented amount of support internationally from China. China is not just willing to back Pakistan at the UN, but it's also led to a greater confidence in Pakistan that Pakistan will be able to withstand
sanctions. And a certain degree of brazenness when you have China sort of even, as I said, blocking India's moves against the Jaish-e Mohammed. Now, General Malik, and then I'll go back to the politicians right after that. General Malik, think back to Kargil. The nuclear question hung over you even at that point. And I remember Brijesh Mishra actually telling me about, you know, the letter that he physically carries to the Americans, and a letter that actually said, we will do anything it takes to get them out. And even at that point, India had actually refused to accept this notion that Pakistan being nuclear armed was going to stop conventional conflict or conventional escalation. But Pakistan has got much more, if for lack of a better word, extremized since then, including fundamentalists now inside the Pakistan military. Can we still afford to ignore the nuclear X factor?
Firstly, Barkha, situation today is quite different to 1999.
Yeah.
Don't forget that there were a large number of countries which had placed sanctions on us because we had carried out the nuclear tests, and we were in fact being considered as a rogue nation. So that was a completely different geopolitical environment than what exists today. And since then, we have heard a huge amount of bluff and bluster from the other side. I have always believed that there is space between the simple cross-border terrorism and the threshold where you reach the nuclear war. I don't believe that Pakistani as a nation are so stupid to indulge in a thing like this. So there is some space, and of course we have to be, there is a risk involved when you take major military actions. And I'm also not suggesting an all-out war. But I'm suggesting that certain amount of escalatory ladder and certain amount of escalatory dominance which is required when we take the military side into this act. And that has to be considered, that has to be coordinated, that has to be controlled by the CCS. Nuclear factor, there is a huge amount of bluff and bluster from Pakistan. I'm quite fed up of it. And frankly, I mean, today, whether they are politicians or some of their military leaders also are overindulging it, and that is not good for their country itself.
Okay, now I just want to...
You also spoke about China.
Yes. May I interrupt you there, sir?
To stop me?
No, not to stop you. It's relevant to what you might say. We've just had Nawaz Sharif meeting with the Chinese PM in New York. And China has issued a statement, and this is of interest to what we were just talking about, saying we attach great importance to Pakistan's position on Kashmir and express the hope that there will be better understanding of the Pakistani position on Kashmir by the international community, also calling Pakistan a victim of terrorism. So this is the point I've been making, General Malik, that there is the China factor, and it complicates it complicates our bid to isolate Pakistan globally. But go ahead now. I just wanted to share that.
Look, China factor is there because as I believe that particularly the POK part, there are three parties involved, India, Pakistan and China. But having said that, I have seen it in the past, no Chinese are going to send their troops into Pakistan or POK. So they can support them diplomatically, they can give them some material, this thing also, but let us not worry too much about Pakistan, Chinese giving military support or coming into their, coming on their behalf and taking armed action against us. That won't happen, and I don't think China today can risk its own economy getting itself involved in somebody else's war.
Okay.
So let's be very realistic as to what can be done by the Chinese.
Okay, I can see Rajiv wanting to come in. So Rajiv, you go ahead and then Chandan and Randeep.
No, I just wanted to make that point about China. I think there are two bogeys that the Pakistan establishment always plays. One is the nuclear bogey, and I think Ram Madhav has said it well. I think it's time that we stop blinking on that bogey. And the Chinese will support Pakistan and North Korea. I mean, that is their DNA, and they will continue to do it. They can't extricate themselves from that position. But that should not change the way we respond to Pakistan. Our response is to Pakistan. Our response is to Pakistani terrorism. If China continues to believe that they can support Pakistan diplomatically to score a brownie point over India, so be it. But we have to do what we have to do, and payback it should be, just as Ambassador Haqqani said. We owe it to Pakistan to pay them back for what they have done, not just this time, for the last several years. And I completely maintain, regardless of China or the nuclear bogey, we should pay them back.
Randeep, you said that, you know, there can be national consensus, but I'm afraid in the Congress's utterances, I'm not sensing that. Rahul Gandhi making a statement saying the Prime Minister is too obsessed with selfies and sound bites and questioning the alliance in Jammu and Kashmir itself, saying that alliance has led to an increase in terrorism. How do you blame this alliance for the terror attack that has taken place in Uri?
I think you have to view things in a certain perspective. May I just begin by saying, when it comes to China or other different countries, India needs to protect its own national security. Our national security has been under siege. Also, it's time to test who is really India's friends in the fight against terrorism and who differentiates between good and bad terrorists when it comes to Pakistan. Having said that, there is also one facet that after 2008, a certain normalcy returned on account of conscientious effort by UPA government in Jammu and Kashmir that deterred Pakistan from undertaking misadventures into India, particularly JNK. It is also the truth that in last 1 year, we've lost more soldiers than we've lost in last 6 years. So the dichotomy of power and the way we have permitted Jammu Kashmir situation to deteriorate has encouraged rogue nations, renegade nations like Pakistan to fish in troubled waters. The truth remains that we need to put up a united response. Congress will stand with the government, and why Congress alone? The entire nation will stand united in a decisive, mature response that country will undertake. I don't think so there is any difference of opinion on that.
But, you know, we can't agree on what that mature response should be. And I want to bring in Chandan on this point. And, you know, I don't believe that television broadcasters should actually determine military strategic policy. So I don't think we should have those delusions of grandeur. But there is a sense, Chandan, that there is a kind of dangerous past rhetoric that the BJP may feel trapped by, that, you know, statements that Mr. Modi made as opposition leader today cannot be used to benchmark what the Pakistan policy should be. You know, people do say things in opposition. The Congress doesn't say in opposition what it used to say in government and vice versa. So do we at least have the assurance that that kind of politics is not what will determine our next step?
I don't know why, Barkha, you repeatedly bring in the, you know, kind of past rhetoric and so on and so forth. Now, this is, I mean, Congress and other parties say a lot. And this
I'm talking inevitable. About them also. I'm saying everybody is chameleon-like in politics.
I don't think that need be brought in this situation, which is very serious, sensitive, and I would say almost warlike. So this is not a time to kind of carp about things. I'm sorry, my friend Randeep Singh Surjewala is still in a carping mood, but I will not get into it. I believe that his support, his party's support, unqualified, I mean unequivocal support, is very important if the India has to take a collective decision to teach Pakistan a lesson, which sooner or later it must do.
Okay.
But let me come to a different point about China.
Yeah.
As far as China is concerned, you see, all this talk of the world standing with India, of Russia, of the US, and Britain and France and other big powers of the past standing with India, I think is meaningless if they can't tame China. Because China is, in a sense, the puppeteer. If without China's support, Pakistan is nothing. And they have a lot of business and a lot of investment in China. Chinese have a lot of stake
in Pakistan,
in the US economy or the other economies. And therefore, I think it will be a main diplomatic kind of objective of India would be to ensure that the other major powers sit on China and cajole China, persuade China that it must put sufficient pressure on Pakistan for it to stop its misadventures, which has been going on and on. And no point in giving homilies that India and Pakistan must sit down together and resolve their differences. How can we do that?
Yeah.
I mean, unless Pakistan stops this activity, stops cross-border terrorism, there is really nothing to talk.
Let me take this to Hussain, because you said, Hussain, that Pakistan has never been as internationally isolated as it is today. And there comes the Chinese statement. And I think Chandan is quite candid in saying, and we all agree that's not going to determine what India does next. But there is the China X factor. That is the elephant in the room, so to speak. That's one. And two, you very interestingly said India and Pakistan are not on the brink yet. Here's, I can tell you, we do feel we're on the brink. Why is it that your reading is that we're not? And do you believe that Nawaz Sharif has any autonomy to make any comment in New York in about 2 hours from now that could still retrieve the situation? Or is it just one Sharif dialing the other Sharif with the Pakistan army chief virtually dictating what the Prime Minister of Pakistan will say later today?
Okay, there are several questions there. So let me tackle them one by one. First of all, I think Chinese statements are meant to reassure Pakistan, and Pakistanis have come to grief depending upon Chinese statements in the past. In 1971, there was a Pakistani assumption that the Chinese rhetoric really meant that China will come into the war on Pakistan support, and General Malik is right. That is not going to happen, so Pakistan has to understand that. Why I think we are not on the brink is because I think the leaders of both countries do realize the cost, and I think that the Indian leaders also realize that there might be a cost to India as well. Teaching somebody a lesson is important, but then you need to prepare the lesson. And I don't think that anything should be done in a knee-jerk manner. And I have considerable respect for both Indian and Pakistani leaders on this one point, that when it comes to knee-jerk, Pakistan has rehearsed this drama many times. We can act with impunity because we have nuclear weapons. But if India is going to try and insert a new dimension into it, it needs a little more consideration than just 4 or 5 days of a lot of noise on television. Lastly, we as Pakistanis have to think, if our greatest joy comes from a lone statement from China in the United Nations or on the sidelines of the United Nations, then we need to reflect on where we stand. And very frankly, we are not in a good position. As I said, Pakistan's passport is now considered one of the worst passports in the world. One third of our school-going children don't go to school. So my point is that India's best bet right now is to persuade not only the international community, which is already ready to put more pressure on Pakistan, but also reach out to the people of Pakistan and say, you know what, we don't really want war, but look at your decision makers, look at your generals, some of whom are already retired generals who are threatening nuclear war on social media. That is an irresponsible behavior which will bring grief to Pakistan. If the greatest joy Pakistan can have is China stood by us, or we were able to inflict some small damage on India, that does not really amount to much. And Pakistan has a lot of thinking to do. I really do think that Pakistan is isolated. which is why we see a dialing up of rhetoric in Pakistan. China is with us, China is with us. Guess what? China is not going to become a substitute for the rest of the world. China, however important and powerful and rich it might be, is only one of 192 other countries in the world besides Pakistan. And let us note that no other country has spoken out in Pakistan's favor on this issue.
Dhruv, to this point of Pakistan seeking an internationalization, which is the other bogey, right? You have many people in Pakistan saying, oh, maybe this will make the world talk about Kashmir.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people have said that, for example, U.S. support for India on this issue is meaningless.
Or platitudinous.
Or platitudes,
yeah.
Exactly. I think more importantly, I think it, an indication that the U.S. would not intervene diplomatically, as it has in the past, or any other country would not try to intervene and try to sort of play peacemaker, try to, you know,
Mediate,
India and Pakistan,
yeah,
are being bad boys and so forth. I think that there's a sort of clearer and clearer understanding in the rest of the world, that, as Ambassador Haqqani has said, that Pakistan is a problem. I mean, just look at what has happened in New York, for example, where
the New York bomber has links
to Pakistan. So I think the message is being heard around the world, and again, a great deal of sympathy. And that sympathy is actually
quite meaningful.
How
far does that sympathy travel, right?
No, I mean, for example, I don't think we should read too much into this bill in Congress. I mean, this is now happening.
The US,
I don't think it'll go very far, and it won't have a particularly meaningful effect on U.S.-Pakistan relations. But I think it is an indicator that certain sections of the U.S. political establishment are quite fed up.
So let me start taking last comments. I'll start with you, Randeep. You said that it is your job to put tough questions to the government. What is the one thing you'd like to hear or see the government do at this moment?
Well, government needs to calibrate three types of strategy. One diplomatic, one strategic, as also what is its what is the way forward. Even I agree that it can't be deliberated upon on television channels, as many channels and their anchors would like to believe. But the truth remains that country is sick of only rhetoric and words. It want a decisive, mature, calibrated response, both in terms of economic sanctions, on diplomatic front, as also as a strategic response.
Okay, Chandan,
and
quickly,
that is what we expect the government to do maturely.
Chandan?
Yeah, we have seen previous governments kind of back off at the last minute, and after saying that it can't be business as usual, ultimately it became business as usual. But I don't think this is the time to exchange comments like this. I would expect our government to take a firm and uncompromising stand and deliver a blow in whatever form it thinks best.
Okay.
Primarily, it must first organize a diplomatic ghirabandi or encirclement of Pakistan, and then it must do something to hurt the Pakistan army and lower its morale. I think these two things must go hand in hand before Pakistan learns the lesson.
General Malik, quickly, and then Rajiv can get the last word. I do have to wrap after that. General Malik.
I'll make two quick points. Firstly, to hasten Pakistan being declared a terrorist state, we should not plead with the other, with the international community, but we should tell them that for us, enough is enough. And if you cannot help us diplomatically and declare this as a terrorist state, then we'll be forced to do something. This is exactly what we did during Kargil War, and you mentioned that.
Yes.
When our NSA met the NSA from the US.
Yes.
The second point that I want to make is that all these options, we are not going into detail, which are being considered by the CCS, or which should be considered by the CCS. Three points have to be factored in. One is the cost, second is the risk and its mitigation, and third is the likely chances of success. When you take all those options and measure them against these three factors, you will get to know what needs to be done.
Okay. I do have to close with Rajiv. And Rajiv, on a slightly different note, because, you know, it is in moments like this that we do finally focus on the military and the soldiers. It's very important that in 2012, you actually moved a private member's bill called the Armed Forces Covenant Bill. And you actually wanted a commitment between the people of India and the armed forces. And I want to close tonight with your talking a little bit about this bill, and might we see the light of day on this bill finally.
Barkha, you know about that bill. I strongly believe that the relationship between a nation and its armed forces is a permanent one. It doesn't just surface at times of conflict. It has to be steady, it has to be empathetic, and it has to be supportive. And I think a legislation in Parliament that, in a sense, affirms to the men, women, and the families of the armed forces that we will stand by you as you serve, sacrifice for the nation is an important thing that the Parliament can do for them. So I hope that in the coming days, in the winter session, that we will take that bill up and with government support and pass it.
Right, and I think that is, in fact, the perfect note to remind our viewers tonight that as we discuss the next steps, and I'll thank my panel tonight, think of the families that have been left behind. The 18 soldiers martyred in Uri are not just statistics. They all leave very, very personal stories behind. And I want to bring up some of these images, absolutely heartbreaking and inspiring at the same time. These are three daughters who lost a father, but they took their exams on the same day as their father's cremation. And you know what they said? They said, Daddy said, no compromising with your exams. Three daughters who are sitting for their exams on the same day that their father, martyred in that Uri terror attack, was cremated. This is from Gaya in Bihar. Then from Maharashtra. From Maharashtra, a four-year-old child's final farewell to his father. We forget that these are children left behind. A four-year-old child bidding farewell to his father. No child should have to go through this. And the reason we bring you these stories tonight and these images tonight is that we think that sitting in Delhi all too often, we can reduce soldiers to nameless, faceless statistics. It becomes just a number. It isn't a number for this child. And finally, we have this 14-year-old child holding the tricolor. A 14-year-old. And, you know, that really does break your heart. That's the flag that draped his brother's coffin. This is from Howrah in West Bengal, who says, punish those who killed my dada. Now, we do try and not be jingoistic on this channel. We do try and be measured. We do try and be mature. We do try and understand the complexity of any state's response to terrorism. But these images of these children is enough to break anybody's heart. And we leave you with these images tonight as India decides what her next steps will be to that Uri terror attack. Thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m.